The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report, a sunny and beautiful Wednesday in Southern California. A little bit later, we're going to have the guy who shepherds the Stanley Cup to all of its various locations after a team wins. He's coming up after our buddy Joe House is on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now. House, what's happening?
What is happening?
Stanley Cup guy.
That's
excited?
Cool.
Yeah.
I saw the picture of your daughter with both the Stanley Cup and the LOB.
Yeah.
Big day for her.
We taped a thing with the Stanley Cup guy in the BS Report studio, and the NBA Finals trophy happened to be also in the studio because that's where our ABC NBA show is. Got both trophies, put my daughter in between them. Could not have been more excited about it. Of course, she didn't really care. All she wanted to do was kind of look at the cup but not touch it. It was weird.
Yeah, did you take a picture with them?
I did.
I would have liked to have taken a picture with them. I think that's a better picture than a picture with the president.
You know what's weird? The cup is heavy. The cup's like a lot, like so heavy that you think you're going to tip over as you're holding it. I mean, I'm a weak human being. I have no muscles whatsoever.
Why is that surprising?
Well, because these guys so effortlessly lift it over their head. I mean, you can tell it's a little bulky, but
yeah.
I was unprepared for how heavy it was, and I started to try to lift it over my head, and then they're like, no, do that. People drop it that way.
So I did it.
I want to talk NBA with you, but we should mention briefly that your Capitals are still in the hunt.
Well, this could be real brief because, you know, out of pure survival instincts, I have shut down the Capitals part of my brain for now. I mean, I'm still, you know, 110% invested and am rooting, you know, with all my heart for the best outcome. But after the way Monday night ended, you know, I just have to protect myself.
I can't keep going
through this.
Yeah, the four-minute double minor coming on the bookends of regulation overtime, it followed by two goals, was about as tough as it gets.
It was very, 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 like, capish, you know?
Yeah.
It was very,
well,
my dad was an original, I know I've said this before, 1974 we had season tickets when the franchise arrived here. And, you know, there have been 10 times over my career as a Caps fan that I can point to just heartbreaking defeat. I know it doesn't rival, you know, the tenure that folks like the Cubs and the Red Sox have, but for me, growing up here, I have to protect myself.
It reminds me a little of what the Kings fans are going through, because the Kings have been in the league since like 1968.
Oh.
It's a much longer time than you think. You kind of feel like they were like showed up in the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've made one cup. It's a little like the Caps where they have two banners. They have a banner for the conference championship in 1993 with Gretzky. And then they won like a division banner. That's the only time they ever won the division. Yeah. So they have two banners total.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that they beat the number one and number two seeds really convincingly in back-to-back games, like, the fan base is kind of in shock, and it does kind of seem like they're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Caps already have exceeded expectations this year.
Yeah.
I love the style of play. They're the most likable Caps team in 10 years, and it's clear that they're every bit as talented as the Rangers. They're probably a little bit more talented on kind of a pure technical basis. But I just can't, you know, after the way Monday night ended, I haven't recovered. That's the best way to put it. I haven't recovered yet.
You know, the strangest story of the whole NHL postseason to me has been Ovechkin you know, everybody's been writing about it. I don't know if casual fans really care, but it's been a huge topic in the hardcore hockey circles about they've limited his ice time and turned him into something of a DH. And it's one of the biggest reasons they're winning. And it makes me wonder, like, here's one of the four or five most identifiable stars in hockey, the face of their franchise, and he's a DH. Like, that's not going to end well. I mean, I know you're going to have, maybe you lose tonight, maybe you come back, beat the Rangers, whatever, but at some point in the future, that's not going to end well.
There are some chapters left to be written. I mean, it hasn't been a pure DH play. He had a ton of ice time in the multiple overtime game last week, and that was during during the game. The regular on ice time was comparable to his regular season, but it has ebbed and flowed, and you know, it's a results oriented game, so here we are in the second round, and the Caps are still, you know, playing, and it's the middle of May. It's tough to argue with the results, but you know, if they lose tonight, it's going to accelerate the interesting summer that surely awaits us.
What's crazy to me is watching all the different. Yeah, first of all, I was shocked that Philly didn't do better. I thought for sure after Philly in round one, I thought for sure that was the team to beat. Like, they just had the mojo.
They couldn't get shots on goal. I don't know.
Nah.
I'm interested in seeing Katie Baker's take. I'm sure there's a hockey nerd explanation for it. Not that she's a hockey nerd, but.
Well, made me wonder, was it like the 07 Warriors shocking the Mavericks?
Yeah.
And then just kind of running out of steam the next round?
Well, they didn't.
Or
Pittsburgh, they were every bit Pittsburgh's equal.
Well, but that's the same thing with the Warriors. The Warriors beat the Mavs. It wasn't an upset. They were better.
Yeah.
But then the next round, it kind of petered out, and it made me wonder. Like, you know, I the thing I was worried about with Philly was their goalie was so shaky.
Yeah.
And we just learned over and over again that is only going to last a while, and that's why the Kings have been so interesting, because they had the best goalie by far. You know, not by far, but at least he's clearly number one. Well, he's number one in the playoffs, at least. He's been really good.
Yeah.
And he's the key of their team. And it just makes you feel like every game it's either going to be a one-goal game or they're going to win.
Well, I was on the receiving end of a four-and-a-half-minute rant by our mutual friend Hershey about hockey goalies and playoffs. I mean, I didn't get a word in edgewise, but he did a great job. It's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, it really is. And we forget every year, or we overlook it. But I watched the Kings all year thinking they weren't good enough. It didn't matter. And also, Quick had stumbled right before the end of the season.
Yeah.
But just thinking, like, it's not going to matter. They're not going to be able to score. They're not physical enough. And, you know, once the goalie gets going, it really all bets are off. It's amazing.
That's true.
The whole team gains like a weird confidence. Like the Kings are physical now. This was like the biggest finesse, wussiest team like you could have imagined watching. All of a sudden now they're like dishing out punishment in the corners. Pretty interesting.
I didn't watch any of the St. Louis series, but I did watch the Vancouver series, and that looked pretty wussy to me. But maybe the St. Louis series is different.
St. Louis tried to shove him around. Kings won two fights in a row.
What?
That was pretty exciting. Yeah, they won two fights in a row.
Who was involved?
The first one was Dwight King.
Okay.
And then the second one was Mike Richards. Got a little mad. I think it was Shattenkirk.
Wow. How about
great
that?
Great name, by the way, Shattenkirk.
Yeah, great hockey name.
But, yeah, they're it's a feisty Kings team. But
right.
I got to say, nothing better than so Saturday, Clips-Grizzlies overtime. Went to that one. Sunday, Kings-Blues, Kings clinch it. Really great crowd, exciting game. Like, the back-to-back was, you know, I could have retired on that for like 3 weeks.
Sure.
Monday night, Clips-Grizzlies overtime.
And I mean,
the best game of the three.
It was not a pedestrian overtime either.
No.
It was
epic.
Electrifying overtime.
Epic. And I'll tell you another thing. The last game, the last play of the regulation, tie game, coming out of timeout. Everyone on the planet knows Chris Paul is going to get the ball and do something.
Yeah.
Grizzlies put Tony Allen on him. Tony Allen's definitely injured, but not injured enough that he wasn't going to rise to the occasion. And it was awesome. It was just like you're watching Chris Paul dribbling at midcourt. You know he's going to make a move. Everyone's standing. Like, it was so intense. Oh, it was fantastic. What a great moment.
I mean, it's a good time to be in L.A.
I wrote a – I may or may not have written a 5,000-word column about the Clippers that's going up later today.
What's the thrust? Give us a preview.
I love Chris Paul.
Okay.
It's
really not about the Clippers. It's more
about
it
is, though. It's about the incongruity of this Clippers franchise that everything goes wrong for them all the time. And now they have this guy who has more confidence than – really, any player I've watched except for Larry Bird. That's how confident he is. Yeah.
No, he's not more confident than MJ.
Oh, I'm talking about just like somebody I've had season tickets for.
Oh, I see. Going to the game.
I've watched day in, day out. Yeah. Not just regular season, not just day in, day out. The way he carries himself, the only person I've seen like that has been Bird.
Wow.
Just the confidence and the confidence that his teammates have in him.
Yeah.
You know, and the way he directs everybody, and it's really, he's so much. I knew he was good. I always respected him. You and I always talked about, last year against the Lakers, and just we always had a ton of respect for him. But to see it day in and day out is just different. It really is. I just can't imagine anybody playing pure point guard better than this.
Yeah, and I guess we can resurrect all of those kind of historical markers, you know, those signifiers. Is there any doubt? Do we need to have any more discussion around whether it's him or Darren Williams?
Yeah, well,
I mean, that's over, right?
Yeah, that's long gone. I think maybe from a talent standpoint, you could argue it a little bit, but when you talk into a personality standpoint, and clearly there's something a little bit wrong with Darren Williams considering his team gave up on him.
Yeah.
And, he just, from a personality standpoint, just seems a little bit different. And also I've watched him play in person, and he never gave me that larger than life feeling that
right.
Chris does. Now, I don't mean to sound like a Chris junkie, but.
Well, if we're going to do pure point guard though, if that's the criteria, then there's no argument. There's really hardly any discussion.
Yeah, you have to go back to Isaiah.
Yeah, I feel that way too.
For somebody that fully understood the real role of a point guard, which is to get everyone else involved for just about the entire game and then take over in the last 4 minutes if you have to. And with Chris, he has to because there's nobody else on that team who can create a shot. It's not going to be Blake Griffin. Where else do you go? So to win, he has to basically take over and execute in the last 4 minutes. That's the only way they can win.
Well, and that doesn't make the Clippers unique. They're unique in that they have the guy. I mean, there's a bunch of playoff teams that don't have that guy.
Right. Derrick Rose was like that. Now. Derrick Rose was like that last year. He was in a very similar situation. The difference is that the other teams know what Chris is going to do, and they can't stop it.
Like, I love Miami stopped him, Chris. Like, you're on a first name basis with him.
I've changed it. I even went with that in the column a little bit. I started calling him Chris a little bit more. I don't like saying CP3. I think he's better than an acronym. I just call him CP. But CP3 sounds like something that would, it sounds like a website.
That's fine.
But Derrick Rose last year at some point reached a point in that Miami series where Miami said, all right, we know what you're going to do, and now we're going to stop it. And they stopped it.
Yes.
Memphis, in these games 3 and 4, were like, all right, here's Chris. We know what he's going to do. And they couldn't stop it. And he was getting in the same spot every time. He's like, I'm going to go to that spot, and I'm going to shoot a 15-footer, and I'm going to make it.
And if you
overplay that spot, I'm just going to dribble in and make a layup.
The big
and they couldn't stop it. Yeah.
The big what if is Tony Allen being healthy.
Yes.
Right.
And Zebo's not healthy either. I mean,
right.
This is not the same Memphis team as last year. I wish I had known that when I thought they were going to make the finals. Zebo's not right. He's been a goon in these plays. He's turned into a goon.
He's kind of overdone it. By what I've seen with my eyes, it just looks a little heavy-handed.
They don't have to double team him. They're guarding him with Reggie Evans. They're putting Reggie Evans on him and not even like helping him out. You know, and Reggie Evans wasn't even playing during the regular season.
I mean, it's disappointing, but this is kind of the product of when you do this cram job with the schedule.
True.
You know, one of the leading stories that's going to apply to most of the teams is injury or guys not playing at 100%. I mean,
yeah.
It's really the predominant story in these playoffs so far, isn't it?
But that's not why Memphis is going to lose. They could have survived with Zach at 75% and Tony at 70%. The real reason they're losing, if they lose this series, is because they pay Rudy Gay $15 million a year, and he can't score on Nick Young and Randy Foy.
It's really astounding because no Rudy Gay last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very difficult and very unfair to compare last year to this year. But you would think that another weapon like Rudy Gay would be a plus that would help overcome some of the health issue minuses.
And yeah, you think it would swing? It would swing toward this year's team a little bit more.
Yeah,
it's really crazy. He's 6'9". I don't think people realize how tall Rudy Gay is. Like, he's taller than Blake Griffin. He's being guarded by Randy Foy, who's 6'1.5". You had Randy Foy in the Wizards. Did you ever think he could guard Rudy Gay in a playoff game?
Well, you know how I feel about Randy Foy. Randy did not acquit himself very well when he was here in Washington.
Rudy goes 8-for-25 in game 4. At least he knew he had to shoot, but he goes 8-for-25 and, you know, just did not step up. And that was one thing. And then the other thing is, after, I don't know what happened to Marc Gasol in games 3 and 4, but just about any decent center in the league can score on DeAndre Jordan at will.
Yeah.
And he not only couldn't score on DeAndre Jordan, he can't score on Kenyon Martin or Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin was guarding him.
Blake's not a terrible defender.
He's 6'7.5".
Yeah, I get it.
Get down the low block, Marc Gasol. Shoot some jump hooks. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I think he had like 4 points in game 4.
They really look out of sorts, you know? I mean, all of Rudy Gay's shots, they don't look, you know, they're not coming by way of flow, at least to my, you know, uninformed eye.
Yeah, what's weird is that I wrote about this in my column today, but like the playoffs come down to somebody on each team saying, "I got this."
Mm-hmm.
And in Memphis, you know, it's not about who gets to be the hero and the whole Kobe thing and Kobe gets to shoot every time in crunch time. It goes deeper than that. It's all about when something's going wrong or when you need a hoop or just the momentum of the game is shifting against you and it's just basketball. At some point, everybody looks around and somebody says, "All right, I got it. And their guy is Mike Conley.
Yeah. Well, and it was Zebo last year.
It was Zebo last year, but it's Mike Conley this year, who was spectacular in game 4.
Yeah.
A really good game, but I don't know what your ceiling is when Mike Conley is your "I got this" guy. And
it's
the same thing with Denver yesterday. Like, you know, they lost game 4 because at that pivotal moment, everybody just kind of looked around a bit and they ended up getting just terrible shots. Then yesterday, it really seemed like the Lakers were going to win. And all of a sudden, Andrew Miller was like, "I got this."
Yeah.
And it made like 3 great plays.
He was the right guy at the right moment, you know?
Yeah.
He should be that guy for that team.
Right. But then again, what's your ceiling if Andre Miller's that guy?
Yeah,
which is why
right.
The Clippers aren't such a good...
They're going to lose to the Lakers in this next game.
But that's why the Clippers aren't in good shape, because their guy who says, "I got this," is one of the best at actually fulfilling those words. I got to ask you about JaVale McGee, because you watched him in Washington. I used to email you and text you. I think I texted you this year during the Clippers game and said, "I love JaVale McGee and I love Trevor Booker." And then you went on like an expletive-filled rant on how I shouldn't love JaVale McGee and how terrible he was.
No, the reason that I have a two-part response and a mild rebuttal.
Okay.
He is not a starting center yet. He and especially a starting center on a team as young and as unaccomplished as this Washington team was. It was just a terrible mismatch and probably unfair to him and his team to have him in that position playing those minutes. He has arrived in a Denver situation that is perfect for him.
Yes.
He comes off the bench the majority of time. He is His strengths are his energy, and his athleticism. He is a very inconsistent performer on the offensive end. The best way for him to get involved is rebounds and
offensive rebounds. Yeah, putbacks.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a perfectly complementary player to that team and the style that they play. And there's not one bit of what I've seen that surprises me with him. He's in exactly the right place, doing the right thing.
You know,
he still doesn't know how to play defense, by the way. He didn't learn that in the last 45 days.
No, but it helps that his arms are the arms that belong on an 8-foot person. When your arms are a foot longer than they should be, you can make up for some issues. I personally would have. I was actually hoping the Celtics were going to make a run at him during the season because I felt the same way about him that I learned this about Marcus Camby because Marcus Camby was on all those bad teams and then the Knicks stole him.
Yeah.
And I remember the Knicks got him thinking like, oh, he's a bust. That's terrible. And then, of course, he different situation with some veterans. He's great. Then Tyson Chandler was on the Bulls. And I remember going to Bulls games and thinking, man, this guy just needs the right team. And then he ended up on that Chris Paul team that year, and all of a sudden he was good. That was before he had the injuries and stuff. But it did seem like JaVale McGee was kind of the logical successor to those guys. I don't know if he's as cerebral as those two guys, but he was just in the wrong situation.
Yeah, he was in a very bad and unfair situation for him here in Washington. And it won't surprise me at all if he gets, you know, a decent contract this offseason, and if he stays in Denver, that he flourishes a little bit. The jury's still out whether or not he can be a starting center in this league. I'm not convinced of it. He's got a long way to go to get his head into the game. He really's got to learn to play position defense. He still doesn't have it. He still blocks the wrong way.
He's in a good situation, though, because he's with Fareed.
Yep.
He's with Costa Couscous, as Barkley calls him. But they
the Mozgov.
And Mozgov, they have like enough bodies that if he doesn't have it, they can throw in like a serviceable semi-stiff to replace him.
Yeah.
But if he does have it, you just ride it. And I thought it was kind of a breathtaking performance last night. What about that one rebound he had when he did the Gervin finger roll follow-up?
Oh, I
did you see
it.
That?
No.
It was like, oh my God.
Well,
he was hooping.
That's the frustration, right? I mean, you see something like that, you say, this guy could be dominant if he has that skill set, right? But he just
doesn't. You know what else? Another good sign for him is that Barkley likes him. I know I overrate Barkley, but I love that Barkley's like, keep doing your thing, JaVale McGee. Like, the good guy, the great players know who the other talented guys are. And
well, look,
I think there's some value in that.
We could go back and look at some clips from earlier this year, though, when they were all dogging JaVale, appropriately so.
I mean, him for dumb stuff. I mean, I think they think he's talented.
He is talented. He's got to learn how to play. He's got to, you know, be in the right situation with the right, you know, surrounded by the right kind of – it's really a maturity thing, too, with him. But it looks like he may have found a good deal for him. And I, you know, him and Nick Young. By the way, Nick Young was the one that I thought was the most marketable Washington professional basketball player this past season.
Yeah.
And for the very reason that he has demonstrated in these playoffs. The guy just gets, you know, in white hot. I mean, he gets so hot that you know, his hands are literally on fire. You can't see his hands because they, you know, they've changed color.
Yeah. Do I need to say it or do you want to say it?
You say it.
Irrational confidence guy. Perfect. He's perfect. That's his destiny. Just come in, you bring him in, you test him out. It's like, you know, throwing him in the pool and see if it floats. Oh, it's floating. Give him the ball.
It's one skill, but it's a really important skill for a team, you know, that has ambition to go places.
It's a skill that we have seen over and over again win teams NBA championships. A guy that can come in and swing a series because he got hot for 8 minutes. And
absolutely
we saw it last
true.
Year with Dallas, with Barea and Jason Terry.
Yep.
But I'm with you. It'll depend on, I guess, the situation and the money. But if you could get somebody like Nick Young for like 3 years, $12 million, that's an asset for a good team.
Yeah.
McGee will be interesting though because there's a chance maybe you overpay him.
people
and hope
you
he's
know,
good.
The numbers that were kind of out there that I saw before he left, and this is part of what made him expendable here, was like in the 10 to 12 range is what
he might
be
worth it. That's what DeAndre gets at.
Well, it's got he's worth it if you are very confident about the situation that you're putting him in. You know that you have the right coaching staff. You know that you have the right combination of veteran players and youth. You know that you're not gonna be looking for a solid contribution from him every single night. You know, you see there's still some maturity stuff that you know needs to get worked out. But he's obviously got a skill set that's pretty unique.
Last thing, and then we're letting you go.
Yeah.
Oklahoma City, James Harden went to a place that I wasn't exactly sure that was lurking inside him. And it made me rethink what I think the ceiling of that Oklahoma City team is a little bit. Am I overreacting because that was an old Dallas team? Or did James Harden show you a little something?
I'm going to say yes. The answer is both. You are overreacting a little bit, and that Dallas team was, you know, down to the last sort of fumes there. But it was really impressive to see that Harden had an extra gear. Who knew?
We saw it during the regular season, but
assessment of Oklahoma City, by the way, though.
Changes mine a little bit because. Here's the thing that we had the same concern, which is that when things went south for them, they just still kept shooting jump shots. And it was Westbrook and Durant. And if those guys played poorly, they couldn't win. But if James Harden proved to everybody else in that game, it's not working for us. Let me take over here a little bit. I'm going to try to get to the rim.
That was the thing.
And then that gets everyone involved. That's a different wrinkle for that team. Now I don't know what to expect from them if they're down 10.
It was the rim part that was most. I mean, I really had a bit of a eureka moment. I couldn't believe it when I was watching it.
Yeah, it might have been the best 10 minutes anybody's played in the playoffs, except unless you want to count LeBron's second half game 3 against the Knicks, which was he's doing that against Carmelo and Chandler and Stiffs.
Nick Young, that 27-point comeback was pretty impressive.
Well, I was talking individual from an individual standpoint, like. I thought it was probably the most important moment in round one. Round one's not over yet, but that and the game Pierce played against Atlanta in game 2, and you know they're gonna lose unless he plays great, and he plays great.
Yeah.
But man, James Harden. I have to go back in my archives and destroy the 3 months of columns when I was making fun of them for passing up Stephen Curry for him. I'm just gonna extinguish that from the internet. A couple key presses and that's gone. Nobody will remember.
I'm not all the way there yet because he did it, you know, against a team, you know, that was really out of it. It was the least pressured kind of fourth quarter, you know. They were going to win the series no matter what. So why not just go see if he can go off for a little bit?
Well, how great is it?
Look, I don't want to demean it. It's exciting.
We have two unbelievable series in the West, potentially. San Antonio Clippers is going to be just awesome. San Antonio win, but it's going to be awesome.
I might come
then,
out, by the way. I might invite myself
out. You should invite yourself.
Catch a couple of those.
And then Oklahoma City and the Lakers is just going to be splendiferous.
Some instant classic stuff in there.
The Eastern series, not as excited. I think Miami's going to roll through Indy, and Boston Philly or Boston Chicago will just be a war of attrition. Obviously, I'll be excited. I'm a Celtic fan, but there would be some ugly games in there. Joe House,
Real quick, if we get Lakers, Spurs, and Celtics Heat in the respective conference finals, that's going to be pretty good.
Co-sign on that, and even Lakers Clippers.
Well, like you're
Thunder
said,
Clippers.
That has a whole other thing,
any combination of those four Western teams is going to be fantastic.
That's true.
And Boston Miami would be fantastic.
Yeah,
Miami against Philly or depleted Chicago, not as fantastic. All right, we're bringing in the Stanley Cup guy. Thanks, House.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Good luck tonight.
Thanks.
The Stanley Cup is here. I can't interview the Stanley Cup, but I can interview the guy who is basically in charge of the Stanley Cup. He's a curator for the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's here right now, Phil Pritchard. How are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. I mean, I guess if the cup could talk, it would probably be a bestseller. But
yeah.
I can't, so you're stuck with me.
The cup would probably be an alcoholic, I'm guessing. There's been a lot of liquor in the cup.
Well, I mean, you look at it, it's a thing of beauty to begin at 36 inches high and 35 pounds, but that bowl itself holds,
yeah.
I guess some would say it's the largest shot glass in the world.
Yeah. I'm sure you've seen some shots done out of the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, what's amazing is when the guys hoist it on the ice, when they win it, that emotion is just all come out. The whole
it's the
season.
Best.
Yeah. And then they go in the dressing room and everything's flowing and the guys are cheering and they're passing around drinking from guy to guy. And the expressions on their face, I mean, they're purely exhausted because they've gone the NHL playoffs, the whole regular season, the preseason. But at the same time, the joy and the relief of, I don't know what the relief is. It's they've climbed a mountain together as a team.
Right.
And they're passing around in the dressing room and being there to see that it is one of a kind in sport.
I remember with Chara last year when he was holding the cup, he kind of morphed into like a crazy monster. Like he was just like screaming. He was just so much pent up everything, and you could just, it is an amazing moment to watch those guys.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Chara's moment there when he hoisted it over his head. At 6'9", obviously the biggest guy in hockey, and he's on skates.
The record for the highest the cup was held, I'm guessing. Right?
Exactly. But, I mean, he had the full beard going because of the beard,
the
superstition of the beard in the playoffs. And he did look, I mean, it was a sigh of relief, but it was a moment that he's probably dreamt over and over again in his head, like every other player that's put on skates and carried a stick. I mean, that was it for him. That moment when everything came out, his emotions were there, and he shared it with not only the Bruins but the entire town and every fan that's been a Bees fan forever.
And it's just different than the other sports because it's the coolest trophy by far. And what's weird is the NBA at some point, I think, had their own version of the cup. And then when I was researching my book, I remember this. Like at some point, it was a cup. And then I think they thought they wanted their own identity separate from the NBA, and they made it the weird, ugly trophy that it is now. They kind of would have been better off keeping it as a cup.
Yeah, comparing sports is like apples and oranges, I guess. But, I mean, you look at the cup, the Stanley Cup, and it is a cup. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You've got that. But you've got the whole aura and the tradition of what Lord Stanley brought to the game back in 1893. That every guy plays for, but I think the unique part about the Stanley Cup is their name is on it, and that's on there. It's etched forever.
And that's it.
And they become part of an elite group that is so small in this world.
Right.
To be able to be a member of the Stanley Cup champion, it's pretty special.
So is it safe to say you've seen more drunk people celebrating than any other human being on the planet?
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of games and sports out there and concerts. There have been a lot of drunk people at, probably. I think maybe it's safe to say that we've been to a lot of celebration parties, and everyone.
Because you can't be around this thing and not drink. You have to drink. I want to drink now as I'm looking at it.
We'll have a drink right now. I think what's amazing about it is when the guys do take it home to their party and to their family and friends, they're not doing it for themselves. They're sharing with everybody that has made that moment possible. And you think back 20 years ago when the first tradition of taking the cup home started, Gary Bettman, the league, and the Hockey Hall of Fame got together to make this work. They knew that the game was much more than on the ice. The team was more than just the guys on the bench. It was everybody. That was the mom and dad that took them to practice. It was their teachers at home. And when the guys take that home, obviously it's a celebration. And what everyone wants to do is drink out of it. So the guy spends half his day hoisting it. Pouring it so guys can and family members and everyone can drink out of it. But every town party is so unique and so special. But most of all, it's so powerful to that player.
So you get it for one day.
They get it for one day, yeah.
Are you there for that day?
We're there. They're stuck with us for the day. We become part of their family, part of their...
So you're making sure nothing happens to the cup, basically.
Well, I don't think that. I mean, if we go back to Chara for a second, you saw the relief on his face.
Yeah.
He is not going to do anything to disrespect what he's worked a lifetime for.
True. Good point.
So when we are there from a public relations point of view, from a historian point of view, from a preservation point of view. Chara knows when he takes it back to Trench in Slovakia, to his hometown, it is Zdeno Chara, and he's the spotlight.
So that's what he did.
Because of that. Yes, and okay. what he did. So when he got knighted in the castle in Trenčín, it was because of his accomplishment, but it's his town that he is proud of.
Yeah.
And to share that with it, he is not doing anything that's going to disrespect or harm in any way the tradition and the aura of what Lord Stanley created this cup to be.
So you never leave the cup alone with somebody, like, overnight? Like, you don't get to sleep with the cup?
If we sleep over, they give us a little brother's room or their spare room or whatever like that. And what's amazing is, and many people don't think this, that guys don't come from big towns. Hockey players are usually small town, whether it's northern U.S., Canada, in Europe, it's the smaller towns. It's not the big towns.
That's a good
point. When we go back to the small town, the whole day becomes a Stanley Cup day.
Yeah.
But at the same point, at a hotel, there's not really a hotel around because you're in a residential of a small town, so you're often staying at a neighbor's, at the house.
That's true. You're in Parry Sound, Ontario.
Exactly.
You can't
There's not a whole strip of hotels. So our travel plans, and obviously geography plays a big part of that when we travel.
Yeah.
But you've got to keep in mind that there's not always a hotel at every corner. So we might be staying on their couch in their basement or in their trailer. Who knows? I mean, it could be a hotel.
So you have to be easy. It has to be an easy person who has the job to follow this.
If you want to know what mattress is best, I can tell you.
A lot of sofa beds.
Sofa beds, yeah.
You travel with your own pillow?
I don't. No, my bag.
You've been doing this since 1988, correct?
Yeah. Started then. Calgary Flames was the first team that won it when I was working with it. And Cullen Patterson, the old Calgary Flame, was the first guy I took the cup to in 89 after the NHL Awards. And back then, they didn't really get a day with it. They got time with it. And Cullen Patterson's day started at 8 in the morning. And it was the day after the NHL Awards, and we arranged it, he was in Toronto. And I drove up at 8 in the morning, and somehow between when we talked the night before and that morning, the street was all decorated, Cullen Patterson Day, drinks were flowing, the whole street was up, kids weren't going to school. It was spectacular. I mean, little did we know then that that's how the days were going to become.
When did that change where everybody got a whole day?
1995. The New Jersey Devils, everyone on the team for the first time got to take it to their hometown.
Oh, good. So something good happened when the Devils won the cup. I thought it was just zero good outcomes, but I guess it was
But you know one. What? I mean, and we talk about the Devils there in 95. The Devils have won three times. And you take Marty Brodeur, who's been on all three. The first time when he won, obviously he was a lot younger guy. His party then, to his most recent party when he had his three boys, changed a whole bunch.
That's interesting,
His family became the focal part.
Yeah.
And they went to the movies, and they ate popcorn out of it in the front row, and it was very different.
They ate popcorn out of the
Front row of the movie house.
That's tremendous.
And when you look at the guys, depending on the age of the player, you'll see how the party's going to change, because the younger guys they're single, they want to go out. The older guys have family.
Yeah.
They've been in the game longer. They've understood it more in that. Some will say they're more experienced or more mature or whatever you want to call it. But the parties change. And it's same with the cultures that you go to. The parties are different.
So when Brad Marchand won the cup last summer, maybe that wasn't the same as Marty Brodeur and his three sons eating the popcorn
out of
the
cup.
Yeah,
you know what? Brad was an unbelievable guy. I mean,
supposedly the greatest,
Great guy. Eastern Canada boy. He stole the town of Boston, but was playing the finals, and everyone loves him, and went back out east. And his mom and dad obviously are a big part of his life and played a huge role in his day and organize it and everything. And I think, I mean, for Brad, being the hockey player he is, his mom, you could see his mom and dad were important and the way their day went and that, and how the day started and ended. And they were very professional and very respectful of what the cup was, not only within the family, but within the area when they had the party, too.
And at the same time, by about 8 o'clock, they were gone, and Brad Marsh and I just weren't.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You make a good point, though, with hockey parents, because, and this is why my son will never play hockey, because I'm a selfish person. The commitment that hockey parents make versus the commitment that the other parents make, you know, like if you're in baseball, at least you get to sit outside during the afternoon and watch your kid, or in basketball, you're in a gym. In hockey, you have to get up at like 4 in the morning and drive your kid to the rink. and then sit there and just be like, what am I doing? I hope this kid makes the NHL. I would never do it.
You know what? I mean, Bill, I think you got a word right on there on selfish. and not for you, but hockey players, they're not.
I'm another child.
They're not like that. Their parents, they take them, drive them everywhere, and they don't sit out in the baseball field and get a tan and eat hot dogs. They're in a cold arena in the middle of nowhere, and they've had to probably dig snow out to get their car to get there. So they've given a lot to that player. And at the same time, not knowing whether the player is going to play pro or be a doctor or whatever he might be. And for the fortunate few that go on, those players never forget it. And whether it's the parents or the coach or their grade 2 teacher that told them to keep it up or whatever it might be, it's really unique and really powerful when they take it home.
So you have, during the course of the summer, every player gets the cup. Do the assistant coaches get the cup?
Yeah, so what happens, the team gets approximately 100 days to celebrate.
And
so
you're there for every day, every of those days?
Yeah, myself, or there's 3 other guys that travel too.
Okay.
So it's not just you're stuck with Phil every day.
Okay, got it.
Sometimes you're stuck with another guy.
Right.
But from, say they win it in the middle of June, and they do the parade, the team photos, the sponsorship parties, the key to the city days, they go to, you know, all the celebrations within the city. Then we start geographically setting up the summer. The assistant coaches are in there, the equipment managers, the owners, obviously, the general managers. I mean, it's the whole team. And that 100 days goes by pretty amazing, but I'm sure if you ask any player from Boston last year, Chicago, whatever, over the last couple of years, it's the best time of their life.
I bet that's tough not to make the 100-day cutoff.
Oh, it's hard.
If you're the 101st most valuable employee of the team, it's a tough one.
You know what's amazing, though? People think 100 days, wow, but basically that's June 15th till training camp starts.
Right.
So they got to get it in there because they're reporting back to training camp.
Right.
And so their focus has shifted from winning the cup last season to now let's try and win it again or let's pursue our new goal or whatever that may be. And they do training camp, and at that time, we get it engraved. So what a lot of people don't know is when Brad Marchand brought it home, his name was not on there. His name didn't get on there until training camp.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And then after training camp is done, we come back with the cup engraved, and then they have a team family party where everyone's there, and they unveil it, and they get their Stanley Cup rings, and they see their names on there. Then they know they've officially accepted as part of the elite Stanley
Explain
Cup
to me... Not every team's on the cup because you ran out of room at some point, right? What was the first year that you ran out of room?
Well, I don't think Lord Stanley ever envisioned
100 years of hockey. Yeah,
exactly. I don't know what he envisioned, but he started off with just the bowl. And obviously,
so it was just this.
It just started.
Nobody
right
can
here.
See in the podcast, but yeah, so it was just
there.
Okay.
And over the years, obviously, as it ran out of room, it began to grow, just like us. You know, we grow bigger. Some of us grow wider, whatever it is. But in this case, it grew bigger and bigger. And after 100 years was done, and magically, the cup was full after 100 years. So the hall again, and the NHL, and the trustees of the cup had to make a decision. What do they do? We've now got a full Stanley Cup. Do we make it 4 inches taller? Do we make a new cup? What do we do? And Brian Trotche, who...
Four-time cup winner.
Yeah, four-time cup with the Islanders, 2 in Pittsburgh and 1 in Colorado. He's a 7-time winner.
Seven-time cup winner. Gee, I forgot
and
about that.
He always says it's the perfect height to hold over your head. So we kind of took that to heart and thought, all right, 36 inches high is perfect. How do we make it stay at 36? So what we've done is every time a ring is full, we remove one and retire it into the Hockey Hall of Fame, slide the others up, and add a new ring to the bottom.
So, but you never changed
Never changed the history. That what made the game great, that never
so
changes.
So who made the cut here?
1927 and earlier.
Oh, so then...
So the history of the game, of the cup itself, is always there. The cup evolves, but it stays the same
height. How many people were involved with this decision? Because I'm the VP of Common Sense. I don't know if you
don't
this
think said. That's common sense?
No, I would have liked to have been consulted. Yeah. I was available. I wish I'd gotten a phone call. Part of me wonders why you just didn't create a new 36-inch Stanley Cup and start with year 101 and then have a new 100 years.
Well, the problem was the first, it was 1993, was the 100 years.
Okay.
So we're not in a...
Oh, so you never had...
It wasn't 2000 or something. It was 1993.
Right.
And magically, and only hockey can do, the first winners was Montreal. The 100th winner was Montreal. And, it's, you know, they all...
That makes me sick.
Hockey always has these great storylines in there and everything, and that's one of them. But we think back to what Trache says, and it's the perfect height. So we kept that. We kept the tradition. We kept the lore of it. We kept the aura of it. And it still evolves, but it remains the
same. I guess that makes sense. I think a second cup would have been pretty interesting, though. You would have won either way. It was really a no-lose situation.
You're right. I mean, and what they're playing for, I mean, that's what it is.
But so how many spots do we have left here?
We have 7 left on the bottom, and then it's time
and
to
remove
these
guys,
another
ring. Oh, man, the 65 Canadians are in trouble.
Yeah. No, they're not in trouble. I mean, they've...
They go to Toronto. The Hockey Hall of Fame
so
is in
to
Toronto.
They come to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Inside it, we have a vault within the hall that the whole history of the cup, what Lord Stanley is, the rings that have been removed, and the story of the National Hockey League and how the game has grown to what it is today.
Where is it? Is it in downtown Toronto?
Toronto, right kitty corner to the Air Canada Center where the Leafs play. Just down the road.
The poor Leafs. At least they have the Hall of Fame, I guess, in Toronto. They got that going.
You know what? I mean, they've got arguably some of the greatest fans in the world in Southern Ontario.
Tortured. I get emails from them. They always want to be included when I write about tortured fans. I was like, don't forget about us.
But like all hockey fans, they're diehard. Win or lose, hockey fans are some of the greatest fans in the world. They love their teams.
Are you a fan of a team, or do you
well, you
have
know what?
To
growing
just
up,
be...
My mom and dad are British background, and growing up, my first game that I ever got the opportunity to watch, the Montreal Canadiens won against the Bruins, actually. And it was on TV, and that's how I became a Montreal fan. But I think over the years, I've come to appreciate how good the game is at every level. And come NHL, I guess I'm one of the lucky guys. I get to hang out with the winners, so that's my favorite team is whoever wins.
But it would still be the most fun if Toronto won.
I think it'd be great for Toronto and for the original six in the NHL if Toronto won.
Toronto won anything. Even if Toronto won a round one series, it'd be great.
it would be great. I mean, like I said, they got some great fans and they got a lot of history in that city.
Right.
But every summer when the cup's handed out and Mr. Bettman hands it over to the captain of whatever team it is, it's pretty special.
So I'm looking at this year.
Yeah.
You have a wide variety of geographic destinations in play, including the Los Angeles Kings and the New York Rangers.
Yeah, we got coast to coast could be happening.
That could be interesting.
It's amazing now.
Kings would be good for you because those guys all live in Manhattan Beach. You might be able to like be on the beach for a couple of those cup visits.
You know what? You know what's amazing? I mean, we've gone through round one. We've got the 8 best teams left in the NHL right now. They're all a team because of a different reason, whether it's a goalie, a great defense, or great forwards or whatever, but they're putting it all together when it matters.
Right.
But we still have 2.5 rounds to go.
I know.
That's for the fans out there, they all know there's still a month and a half of hockey left, and it becomes harder and harder, and we'll see how
it
goes.
Give me the craziest cup story you have.
Wow.
The craziest thing you've ever seen happen with the cup involved.
I'll tell you two stories first.
Okay.
1999, Dallas Stars win the cup.
Yeah.
Blake Sloan, one of the players at the time, gets called up from Houston Aeros in the American Hockey League. He gets called up in the finals. Plays one game in the finals, I think. And he's part of the Stanley Cup champion. So I don't want to say he's in the right spot at the right time because he earned his keep there. But he's now a Stanley Cup champion. He wins in juniors, wins in minor pro, wins the Stanley Cup. We're in the dressing room, and everyone's talking what they're going to do, and Blake comes over and sits beside me and introduces himself. And he said, I'm going back to Chicago with it. Hopefully you come with me. I said, I'd love to, Blake. He goes, we're going to go skydiving. I said, great. I said, why do you want to go skydiving? And he turns around and walks away to his buddies. He goes, he didn't really react. He didn't say anything. And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I just wanted to see what I could and what I couldn't do with it. He goes, I don't want to go skydiving. He goes, I've got a plan. And I goes, I just wanted to see what you'd say. So
you were ready to skydive with the cup.
I didn't comment anyway. I didn't know where he was going with it. But what I found out from it, he had all the respect in the world for it. He didn't want to do anything. He had a road hockey tournament just outside of Chicago with all his buddies that he grew up with.
Yeah.
So what you thought was going to be a wild party, he had so much respect. It was at Center Ice, or Center Road, if you want to call it. And then on the other angle, Timo Solani from the Anaheim Ducks from Finland, takes it back to Helsinki, outside of Helsinki. Had a huge party, big karaoke party. I'm not sure if anyone knows Timo can sing. I'm not even sure if Timo knows he can sing, but he's pretty good. And then we ended up at a sauna party. And for Finnish culture, saunas are a big part of Finnish culture. So you go and jump in the sauna, you get really hot, and then you go jump in the ocean and really cool down. And so he had the sauna in there because for him it's all important. It's his background. It's his culture.
Right.
The thing we have to tell Timo is it's sterling silver. We can't have it at 200 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to melt eventually, Timo. So we got the photos. We got some video. We got it in and out of there. But for him, he wanted it for his culture. So all the guys have these crazy ideas, but when you hear them and they explain it to you, they're pretty special.
I don't know that much about the Finnish sauna culture. I need to go Google that after we're doing the podcast.
Every guy in Finland has a sauna. It's important.
Has the cup ever disappeared?
You know what? In our world of travel, we go by airlines, obviously, like a lot of people travel these days, and airlines are becoming tougher and tougher in our flying world. Unfortunately, sometimes it's been misplaced out there, but thankfully there's a lot of hockey fans at all the airlines and everything.
Nobody's ever, like...
No.
Kind of taking it from somebody's house. And
no, you know what? Back in 1962, a Montreal fan stole it from the Chicago Stadium.
See, the Montreal fans.
And he only took it because he wanted. He thought it should go back home where it belongs.
You got to watch out for Montreal.
But more importantly, he had to deal with Chicago police. And the Chicago finest, I hear, well, I remember there when the Blackhawks won, they were on our side, but they're pretty tough guys.
So you said popcorn. Popcorn's been in there.
Popcorn.
What's the craziest
cereal.
Thing you've seen in there?
I'm going to guess probably poutine. You know, poutine, french fries and gravy and cheese all melted together. It's a heart attack.
That was in the cup?
Yeah, that was in Quebec City. It's a big French thing.
So the cup has to be clean then?
Every day, yes. Lobster, Brad Richards, when he took it back to Prince Edward Island, his dad is a lobster fisherman.
Lobster?
So he had a lobster sitting in it, and they all ate lobster out of it. Obviously, all sorts of different beverages.
Right. That's
Jello,
an understatement.
You know, I the whole bit. It's holds 168 ounces, that thing, so there's a lot can go in it.
What's, like, the most dangerous place the cup has been in?
Dangerous? Well,
has it been in a gentleman's establishment?
Oh, I'm sure it has, not with me.
Yeah.
You know what? Patrick Kane took it over Niagara Falls. I mean, he didn't obviously go over, but he did the walk thing.
Yeah.
And it was called Hurricane Day because of Patrick Kane. It was pretty neat, but we all had the rain gear on and that, and he held it up on there.
Yeah.
Later on that day, he had a tractor trailer that put him up on a fire ladder, you know, the big fire ladders to go on the tall buildings. So
yeah.
He held it over his town on the ladder. And the ladder broke. They couldn't get it down, so we had to stay up there.
Oh, my God.
Until we could fix it. Whether that was I mean, obviously the fire guys knew what they were doing and that, but...
Yeah.
I mean, we get in some unique situations, some great photo opportunities and that, and they all do it because they respect what they had. Patrick is a big supporter of the fire in Buffalo, New York, where his hometown is. So, thankfully it's all safe, and it's here today.
Mm. I think from a health standpoint, like after like the 120th person has drank out of it that night of the cup, could get dangerous.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, you're right. I guess.
I guess you don't think about it because
no,
you just won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they're a team. They went into the.
It's a lot of saliva to share.
It is. I mean, okay, it's Bill's day. What does Bill do with it?
What does Bill do on Cup Day?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. I think I would just want to hang out with it. Because I'm old. I'm in that parent stage. Like, when you talked about the popcorn in the front row of the theater, I was like, yeah, that sounds like kind of what I would do for it. 20 years ago, I probably would have lost it at 2:30 in the morning.
I would have found it for
you. Yeah, you would have found it for me somehow. Who is the all-time happiest person you've seen with the cup?
Wow. All-time happiest.
Like, people cry occasionally, right?
Yeah, by all means. And not just the players. I mean, fans, too, in the crowd that have... I mean, you think back when the Rangers won in 94, they had gone 54 years.
And it seemed like it was going to be 540.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the Bruins won last year after 39. I mean, there's a lot of fan support in there. And the teams, whether they can feel that pressure or not in the arena, but... I mean, we talked about Chera earlier and his reaction, that all the guys are that reaction, I think. It's.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you can rate a happiness scale on there. I mean, they're.
That's a good point. It's probably
it's,
even.
It's a. Yeah, it's a. They're on the highest mountain or highest peak of their life right there.
Well, I mean, if the Kings win, you know, L.A. doesn't get a lot of credit as a sports town and for a lot of legitimate reasons, but they do have diehard hockey fans, because I've been going to the games all year because I get season tickets. And it was amazing to me how little good moments they've had. Like, they hadn't even made the round two in 12 years.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I think they only played in the Cup that one time in
93. Yeah.
And, like, if you go through the top 10 Kings moments, it's not a long list. I can't even imagine what they would do if they made the finals, much less won the Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I think of a guy like Luke Robitaille, who has been a King since day one.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets drafted late in the NHL draft, makes the team, loves the city,
yep.
has given everything he can to it. It'll be a magical moment for him. But like you said, the Kings fans, there's a lot of people in L.A., so the percentage-wise of hockey fans is very small, but they are very loyal, like we talked about Toronto fans and that. I mean,
let's be honest. The Maple Leafs are the big – that would be the big – in terms of drought and happiness and like a release
like
from a fan base,
yeah,
wouldn't they be number one? They'd have to
be. Well, you know, I mean, you look at the teams that are left now, St. Louis and Los Angeles, either of them have won the Cup. I mean, it's their – same, they've been in existence the same time.
When did Toronto win the last
years,
time?
67, so they're 45 too, so.
Yeah, but come on, they care about hockey more in Toronto than St. Louis or Los Angeles. If they missed the playoffs, then the city almost shut down.
Yeah, it's
poor Brian Burke.
Yeah, he's got his job cut out for him, but he's doing
certainly
he's
does.
Doing great. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so where does the Stanley Cup go next?
Well, we're finishing a tour here in L.A., and then we've got a couple of sponsorship events up in Canada and that, and then I think we're getting on to round three, and we'll see who those next four teams are, and we'll go from there. So,
amazing.
In a month from now, we'll see where Lord Stanley passes the cup to the captain, and see from there.
And is the Hockey Hall of Fame worth me going to?
It is. Outstanding. You come, and I'll take you for a tour.
I was thinking about going to the film festival this year, and I could bang out the Hockey Hall of Fame
same
in like
time.
3 hours.
Yeah. If you're
is there enough
Bruins
stuff there for me?
There's a ton.
And it's in Toronto, so you probably have no Montreal stuff whatsoever, right?
You come up, we got something for every fan.
Oh, man. Yeah. Hate the Habs. All right, Phil, thanks so much. Good luck with the Cup. Try not to lose it.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having us. I mean, like I said, if it could talk, we could sit here all night, but you stuck with me. But, hey, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Target to
sign
off.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.